Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Good morning. It's really nice to be here this morning. I'm starting a series in 2020 to go through the CCM cultures. So what does the Christchurch Manchester cultures, what are they, what do they look like, how do they feel? They're kind of based on a book that you might have come across last year that Colin wrote on multi-planning. So if you've read it, then this is a seven-week period that you can reread it. If you haven't read it yet, then there are a few copies available either at church or on a reputable online retailer that you might be able to pick a copy up of. We're just going to kind of unpack what those cultures are, the way that Christchurch Manchester has been built from the start, and also the cultures that we want to maintain as a church. Culture is a bit of a weird word. It's not really kind of a great, best definition that I've ever come across. It's kind of the way we do stuff. So the way we do church, the way we do Christianity, what that looks like, what it feels like, the atmosphere that we operate in as we come together, being around together. And there are seven cultures that we're going to step through over the next 7 weeks, which kind of translate Bible truth into what it looks like to live out Christianity together. So they range from having a second chance culture, thinking the best of each other, having a culture of generosity, being forward-looking, being wholehearted in what we do, having a good food culture, which I think we epitomise to perfection at Lady Barn. And today we're going to start with the have-a-go culture. So there are seven different things that we've kind of encapsulated what Bible truth looks like when we come to church, when we do church together. It's about the way that we talk to each other, the way we talk about each other when we're not there, the way we treat each other, the way we treat people that aren't part of the church, that don't know Jesus, the way we support and care for each other, the way that we serve the poor, how generous we are in our time and our money, the way we walk together in our faith. It's how we do Christianity. You can kind of pick up on a culture really quickly when you're, you can think about what your culture is at work, for example, or where you study. It could either be stressful and pressured and toxic and every man for themselves, or it could be collaborative, supportive, and a very positive atmosphere to come to work, which is why in the morning, tomorrow, you're going to be jumping out of bed loving to go to work. Culture describes what it feels like to be around the people. If you're new to a team, it's really quick to work out what the culture is like. If someone talks to you on your first day, if they welcome you into the team, or if someone looks down on your inexperienced questions, is mean to you, tries to bully you and make you feel inferior. They could encourage you and listen. They could take you around the office and introduce you to everybody that's part of your new team. You sense exactly what the culture is the moment you step into that room, into that team. It's just intuitive. So we're going to take the next 7 weeks to look at these cultures, the way we want to do church, the way CCM has been founded, and what we try to maintain. I would go as far as say it's the way that we want to do Christianity, not just church. Here together, but also when we are with our family, with strangers, with friends at work. So we're going to have a look at have-a-go culture, which is the first one. And I'm going to use a passage in Luke chapter 9 and 10 to kind of pivot what it looks like to have a go. Luke chapter 9, a gentleman comes to Jesus and asks him, what is it like to follow him? What does it mean to follow Jesus? And Jesus answers him in a few verses, but I want to just pick one out that really kind of pivots into Luke chapter 10. And in Luke chapter 9, Jesus' response to this gentleman is this: no one who puts their hand to the plow and looks backwards is fit for the kingdom of heaven. Jesus makes a pretty bold statement. It makes you think about the answer that he's trying to give to what I thought was a pretty straightforward question. But Jesus makes the gentleman really think about what he's saying. No one who puts their hand to the plow and looks backwards is fit for the kingdom of heaven. He's talking about the cost of following Jesus, to leave behind your comforts and your family and the way that you think and your worldview of what things, how things should be done. The things that you think are important, you should leave behind. You should, if you're going to plow the field, you need to look forward. You need to count the cost. But I think it's also about, if you've put your hand to the plow, then get on with it. Like, plow the field. Don't look backwards. Doing the things that Jesus wants us to do. Kevin DeYoung has written a really thought-provoking book called Just Do Something. And it's a bit of a pushback on the culture of, let me see what God's will is in my life, let me sit around and wait and pray about it. He just says, if you're in God's will, do something. It doesn't take a long read of the Gospels to find that Jesus is building and advancing his kingdom at a really fast pace. He is getting on with it. I mean, you can read Mark's Gospel and it's just one thing after another thing after another thing. And Jesus is trying to bring more people into the kingdom. So when we, as a church, have been brought into the kingdom, it's not so that we can take a seat on our reclining chair, put our slippers on, smoke a cigar and watch Jesus do everything. He brings us into the kingdom to send us out to further and advance it. So when Jesus says, when you plow a field, you're looking straight ahead. You're going forward. And you're focused. Because if you're looking behind, that plow is going to go all over the place. So we need our eyes fixed on him. And this verse, immediately after Jesus says this, he then turns to 72 of his followers and he sends them into towns and villages to have a go at following him. So we're going to read those verses in Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, verses 1 to 20. And the Lord chose 72 disciples and sent them ahead in pairs to all of the towns and places that he then planned to visit. These were his instructions to them. The harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest. Ask him to send more workers into the fields. Now go and remember that I am sending you as lambs among wolves. Don't take any money with you. Don't take a traveler's bag or an extra pair of sandals, and don't stop to greet anyone on the road. Whenever you enter someone's house, first say, may God's peace be on this house. If those who live there are peaceful, blessing will stand. If they are not, the blessing will return to you. Don't move around from home to home. Stay in one place. Eat and drink with whatever they provide. Don't hesitate to accept hospitality, because those who work deserve their pay. If you enter a town and it welcomes you, eat whatever is set before you. Heal the sick. Tell them the kingdom of God is near. But if a town refuses to welcome you, go out into the street and say, we wipe even the dust of your town from our feet to show that we have abandoned you to your fate. And know this, the kingdom of God is near. We'll skip a few verses. And verse 16 says, then he said to his disciples, anyone who accepts your message is also accepting me, and anyone who rejects you is rejecting me. Anyone who rejects me is rejecting God who sent me. And then when the 72 returned to Jesus, they were full of joy, and they reported to him, Lord, even the demons obey us when we use your name. Yes, he said, I saw even Satan fall from heaven like lightning. Look, I have given you authority over all of the power of the enemy, and you can walk among snakes and scorpions and crush them. Nothing will injure you, but don't rejoice because the evil spirits obey you. Rejoice because your names are registered in heaven. This is a set of instructions that Jesus has given to 72 disciples as they head off to spread the news to have a go. And so I want to look at what would seem like a small example in the Gospel of Luke as a small event, but is kind of symbolic about what it's like to follow Jesus and pioneer to have a go preaching in the gospel. And there are there's a ton of instructions, and we're not going to do any of them really much justice, but I kind of want to just section the preach into three sections. There's no surprises. But I want to give you a bit of a warning. My first point is basically my sermon, and then my second point is a little bit short, and then my third point is really short. So once we've got through the first one, if you're still with me, you know we're nearly the end. So there are three kind of ways that I want to view how Jesus instructs these 72 disciples to have a go. The first is that they have to step out in faith. They have to step out in faith. The second bit is he prepares them to face failure. And when they finish, they return full of joy. So I want to look at their faith, the failure, and the fact that when they finish, they are full of joy. So they step out in faith. These 72 followers had faith. It's remarkable that these 72 people that have not really spent much time with Jesus, in, by all accounts, take instructions from him and go out into villages and towns that Jesus has never been before and preach the good news. They're an unnamed people group. They follow Jesus, they spend time with him, they have faith, so they have a go. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 says this, "We walk by faith, not by sight." These 72 people are going to leave Jesus, the physical Jesus, and go to places where he hasn't been before on their own in pairs to preach the gospel. They need to step out in faith. You'll know that some of the heroes of faith are recorded and named in Hebrews 11. You'll probably be able to name most of the 12 disciples who then go on to write large sections of the Bible. You may have heard of a guy called Paul, who started this whole church planting idea, and he was used to explain some major gospel theology. But these 72 people, like billions of Christians between then and now, have their acts of faith unrecorded and still remain unnamed. I think that demonstrates to me that the faith to follow Jesus, to step out, is open to all of us. You don't need to be part of an elite group of people to have a go. This is an example for all of us who will largely remain unnamed. With our acts of faith unrecorded through history, most of us, I hate to break it to you, won't be famous. A biography probably won't be written about you, and you most likely won't uncover some new theological truth that's going to be groundbreaking to the church. Your name will be in the book of heaven, but your acts of faith won't make news headlines. But like these 72, we are sent out with the Great Commission. Everybody gets to go. The 72 haven't gone to Bible school. They've only spent a couple of months, maybe a year with Jesus. They're probably, you wouldn't call them exactly overqualified, but they've spent time with Jesus. They're passionate and have faith for him, so he sends them. He allows them to have a go. And that's a big part of what we're trying to build and keep going in CCM. We want as many people as possible to spend time with Jesus, to follow him, to build in their faith and to grow and to pioneer and push forward the gospel. We want people to have a go. Now look what it looks like for these people to have a go. They have to go to places that Jesus has never been before. He says, he chooses 72 people and he sends them ahead of him in pairs to towns and places he then plans to visit. He sends them off ahead of him. He doesn't pioneer and visit the whole countryside and then ask them to do a bit of follow-up work as he goes. He sends them into new places, places that he hasn't personally gone to before. There are people in my life and your life that we are the pioneers of the gospel to. We are the ambassadors of Jesus. We are the representation of what the kingdom of God looks like. Many of the people that you and I know don't have a heritage. They've not met Jesus before. They don't know much about him. And we are going ahead, if you like, trying to live out the gospel, to represent Jesus to people, to prepare the way. This week, I took a train journey back home, and I wasn't intending to get the same train as a colleague, but I happened to get on the right carriage where my colleague was sat. So we sat on a train and chatted for a couple of hours. I'm fully aware that I've told you a train journey story before, that got pretty emotional, so I'm just going to try to rein this one back in. But I met my colleague, and we sat, and we spent maybe just over an hour talking about a whole random bunch of stuff. And my colleague opened up about some of the real struggles that they were facing at home. Some like pretty difficult stuff that I was way out of my depth on. And we chatted, and it did get a bit emotional. So from somewhere deep within, I tentatively reached out and offered if they wouldn't mind if I would pray for them. Do you know the response that I got back? No one has ever done that before. No one has ever prayed for me. That means a lot. Thank you. No one had ever prayed with them. No one. Ever. It was like Jesus was saying, you are going on ahead of me. You are going to introduce this idea of God and Jesus and praying and this relationship thing. Have a go. Pioneer. It's exactly what he was saying to these 72. I'm sending you on ahead. And I don't want to put words into Jesus' mouth because that would be a really bad thing to do. But I think basically what he's saying is, look, have a go and we'll get this kingdom thing going faster and faster and faster. We're going to build momentum as we send more and more people out. So I think by getting stuck in, by having a go, both the kingdom advances and your faith in Jesus and God grows too. Now, Jesus caveats the whole sending out with a little bit of a warning to these people that their faith shouldn't be distracted. He says, take no money bag, no luggage, no spare sandals, and don't greet anyone on the road. There seems to be a bit of an expectation that as they go out and have a go, God will provide as they start. You probably don't need me to tell you that in CCM, every time we try to do something like a new church plant or a social action thing or a new avenue of ministry, that we could always do with more people, more resource, more money. But God provides as we go. As we push, as we follow, as we pioneer, God provides. And Jesus tells his disciples, don't take much baggage with you. Travel light. It gives you the opportunity to be quick, to be nimble, to react to needs as they change, and to not carry unnecessary baggage with you that's going to slow you down in the urgency of spreading the kingdom. This is how Izzy packs for holiday. Sorry. We're to follow Jesus without baggage, right? They're his words, not mine. So you take a look around this room. We've rented a community centre. We borrow some instruments from the people that are then going to play them. And then we pack everything that we have in a little cupboard at the back of church. Jesus says, go light, go quick, and don't greet anyone on your way. Don't get distracted. Now, that may seem really rude to you. Don't greet anyone. Sat here in Manchester in 2020. But travelling and greeting people in the Middle East was a big deal. Like, if you met someone you knew, it involved stopping, talking, sharing your life story, and then inviting them back for some food to your house. Now, if you did that every time you went, it was a big social thing. You wouldn't get very far. Which isn't quite like Manchester, which by all accounts is quite a friendly place, right? I moved up from the southeast. Like this, people actually talk to you in the northwest, which was a bit of a revolution for me. But even if you see someone in Manchester that you kind of know, you could probably get away with a nod, a grunt, and not breaking a stride as you carried on walking past them, right? Maybe that's just the way that I've got a completely wrong expectation of what it's like to greet people in the street. But you don't have to spend much time, right? You can just carry on going. Jesus wants these 72 people to feel the urgency. Don't carry excess baggage. Don't stop. Don't get distracted. These towns and villages, Manchester needs to hear the good news. So have a go, step out, pioneer, and don't get distracted. It's interesting that Jesus also asks them to couple this with prayer. As they go, he tells them to pray. In verse 2, he says, look, the harvest is great, but the workers are few. So pray to the Lord who is in charge of the harvest and ask him to send more workers into the field. Jesus instructs them to pray. To pray for help, but not wait for help. I think that's really important distinction. He tells them to pray for help, but not wait for help. The harvest is plentiful, laborers are few. There aren't many of you, he says, so pray to the Lord of the harvest that he will send more laborers. Jesus tells them to pray for help because I think he's fully aware that it can be pretty daunting. Every day, sharing Jesus, trying to live it out in the world can be pretty daunting. And we have a pretty big job on our hands to share Jesus with large parts of our community that don't know him. There are people in Manchester that have never heard of him. There are people close to you and me who currently reject him. It's tough. And so Jesus says, pray for help. He teaches them to pray for help. Sometimes you are the one praying for help. Sometimes you are the help that someone else is praying for. Most of the time, it's a little bit of both. I can remember us coming to CCM, we were praying to join a church that would really help us. a church that would welcome us, that would look after us, that would spiritually feed us. We came here for one service. We haven't gone anywhere since. I don't think we've got any plans to. No. CCM has been a huge part of helping us, right? You pray for help, you get help as you go. I think there's also like a bit of sometimes if you wait, you're never going to get everything that you need to then go. Like you'll always want more resource, you'll always want more people, you'll have too many questions and doubt. And if we waited that long, we wouldn't need any faith anyway. It's about trusting Jesus to grow and provide as we push out. 2020 is the year where we get to have a go. If you look around, Annie and Elizabeth have been blessed to go to Kingsway. This is us having a go. Scary, eh? But I think we do it because we trust, because we step out in faith, because we believe God is growing his kingdom and we want to be part of it. So there's a massive space in CCM to be able to do that. That's what we want to try to build and encourage people that want to have a go to step out to build their faith. That's my first point. So now you know that most of the sermon is on its way. So the second bit, I think it's really important, is that Jesus prepares them for failure. It's probably a little bit of an odd thing to do when you're trying to provide a bit of a motivational speech to people to go into new towns and villages. But he says, look, having a go is not the easy life. He says, I am sending you as lambs among wolves. You remember in that previous verse in chapter 9, he says, if you put your hand to the plow, you don't look backwards. I think there's a little bit of that because behind you, there's probably some disappointments and mistakes. So he wants you to go and follow him forward. If you keep looking back, wishing that other things would have changed and done differently, you're never going to grow in the way that God wants you to grow. So he's preparing them for a bit of difficulty. And I'm sure this doesn't just apply to planting churches, to leading a church, to serving at church, to doing mission. I think this applies to like everyday life. It's difficult. You're a lamb amongst wolves. A lamb is different to a wolf. A lamb is weaker than a wolf. It's not as dominant as a wolf. So as a Christian, as you pioneer, have a go at representing Jesus, you look different. Maybe you look weaker. You speak and live differently. You stand out. And maybe it seems like you're up against aggressive, combative wolves. Jesus knows that, but he says it's not a wolf-on-wolf competition. You are a lamb amongst wolves. So when you represent Jesus, you do it humbly. You do it carefully. You look after people. You are a lamb amongst wolves. You're not aggressive. You're not ramming Jesus down people's throats. You look after them without pride and without trying to create combat. That's not easy. And then Jesus follows it up with, some people receive you and some people won't. So whenever you enter into a house, say peace to the house. So basically tell them about Jesus, but also do it in a peaceful way. And if they receive you, then your peace and blessing will rest on them. So he does say, look, if you live out the gospel and people see it and receive it, then spend time with them. He says that here. He says, like, if it's fruitful, remain with them, eat with them, drink with them, don't go anywhere else, invest in them, build relationship with them. But if nothing happens, move on. You might think that if Jesus is the one telling you to go and you go, and if Jesus has given you all of these instructions and you follow those instructions, this is going to go quite well, isn't it? It's not the way Jesus says. He says, it's going to get difficult and sometimes it won't go the way that you want it to go. You're going to be rejected. So he says, whenever you enter into a town and they do not receive you, go into the street and say, even the dust of your town that clings to my feet, I wipe off against you. I am moving on. They are to wipe the dirt off the sandals of their feet. I think it's important that we take stock of this. When things don't work out, we don't let the failure stick to us. We wipe it like dirt off our feet. So when you, for the first time, try to tell your friend or family about Jesus and it doesn't go the way that you were hoping. When you offer to pray for someone and they reject that offer. When you try to reach out and be kind to someone in the office that's just really difficult to get on with and it doesn't go the way that you want it, you don't let that stick to you. It's hard, really hard. Sometimes we take it as a personal failure, but Jesus is saying, look, if they reject you and they reject me and they reject God and they reject the message, wipe it like dust off your feet and move on. You don't let it stick to you. I was a couple of weeks ago, I bought a book and tried to read it to Isla. Isla's at the stage where if you put anything in front of her, she just wants to grab it and stick it in her mouth. So most of the time I just make up what the story says and just allow her to chew on the books. Probably not great parenting advice, but that's kind of how I'm rolling at the moment. But this book, the story of this book is about some children that have gold stars and grey dots. And what they do is when they do something great and successful and everyone celebrates and wants to acknowledge it, they stick a gold star on the children. And then when a child makes a mistake or is a failure, they stick a grey dot on the child. And these children walk around with stars and dots stuck to them and carry them around so everyone can see. And the story is basically about a child who struggles with all of the grey dots, the failures and the mistakes that they have in their life, and the expectation that clings to them with all of these grey dots. And the point of the story, which I'm pretty sure at 7 months, Isla, it's kind of lost on Isla at the moment, is the children are trying to figure out how they don't let their failures and mistakes stick to them, how they need to just let them drop off. Because they need to keep learning, they need to keep trying, and they're going to make mistakes, but they need to keep having a go, because it's part of them growing up. And that's important spiritually too. That when things don't go the way that we think it should go, when the message is rejected, we kick the dirt off our feet. We don't let it stick to us. We have another go. Jesus doesn't want these 72 to become conservative because they're all going to face failure. And if they start like holding stuff back, this kingdom thing isn't going to go very well. So he wants them to keep going, to keep pushing, to keep having another go, to go on to another town, to keep preaching the message somewhere else, not to give up. He wants them to keep pioneering. He doesn't really overly protect these 72 people, by all accounts. He doesn't wrap them up in cotton wool. He lets them just go out because we mature when we step up, when we step out, when we try new things. We grow up when we succeed, and we definitely grow up when we fail or when failures occur. I think that's really important for us to grasp that as part of the gospel message. We all can have a go. We all can have the faith to have a go. We pray for more help, but we trust God will pioneer, provide, and grow his kingdom as we step out, and we learn from it. So they've had faith to step out. They have faced some failure or rejection. But my final bit is when they return, they are full of joy. Like, look at their response when they come back. The 72 return with joy, and they say, look, even the demons obey us when we cast them out in your name. That you can just imagine a group of 72 people just like bounding down the road towards Jesus, like full of joy, like wanting to tell him everything that they've just been able to do. Like they are fist pumping and high-fiving and everything. They are full of excitement for being part of pushing the gospel message out. They're rejoicing. Despite the fact they're lambs amongst wolves, even though they have faced setbacks and failures, even though some towns and villages have rejected their message and they've had to move on, they are just like full of immense joy being alongside each other, serving for God and seeing stuff happen. They're super excited. And I think joy has a significant part to play in how we respond to having a go. It's a lesson that we can take away. Having joy being part of God's kingdom. Right? It should be joyful that we get to share a message, spread the kingdom, and see stuff happen. Like, we should acknowledge when stuff happens, and we should be full of joy. It should be, this thing should be fun, right? Doing this is amazing. And I can honestly say that over the 4 years of being at CCM, like, I've had a ton of fun, like, with everybody in this room. Like, it's joyful when we pray for stuff and it happens, when we try new things and it comes off, when people come in that are brand new. Like, it's just exciting. Like, it fills me with joy being part of CCM, and that's what we want to keep cultivating. So the 72 return with joy telling Jesus what they've done. This is really funny. They say, look, we saw demons flee. And Jesus says, yeah, I know. I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning. Like Jesus is saying, look, I was with you when you were doing all that stuff. When you were eating and drinking and shaking dirt off your feet, I was with you. I was backing you. I was working with you. And we play a part, and sometimes we think our part is so small, but we change worlds that we can't see. Because when we are pioneering and sharing and praying and eating and drinking with people and building community, Jesus is defeating the enemy. He says, you saw demons, and that's wonderful. When you were doing that, I saw Satan fall out of heaven like lightning. Like, just imagine the impact that those 72 people were having in worlds that they couldn't see. And they come back rejoicing in what they have been part of. Church shouldn't be intense. It shouldn't be pressurized. It shouldn't be forced. This should be a have a go and be joyful doing it together kind of environment. So Jesus says, look, but don't be just rejoicing in the fact that you saw demons cast out. Rejoice in this. Rejoice that your name is in heaven. Like, after all is said and done, rejoice in this foundation, because your names are registered in heaven. When we succeed, don't focus on the success of what you've done. It's worked out brilliant, so praise Jesus. Your name is in heaven. And when you struggle and you face failures that you think that you've created and you've messed up, it grows your faith, but praise Jesus, your name is in heaven. And I think if we're going to wrap up a have a go culture, I think this is the best conclusion we can come to, right? When you have a go, the security of God's grace is the best thing to be resting in, because it doesn't define your identity, whether you are successful or whether you are not. Your name is in heaven. And Jesus wants you to grow, wants me to grow, wants all of us to grow in our faith by stepping out. So we're going to have a look at seven cultures, the way that we live together, the way that we do church. These aren't just things that we believe, they are the demonstration of what we believe. This isn't theology, this is the outworking of theology as we meet together. Today we've looked at having go, and I guess the whole point is we all can. We all can have a go. Jesus wants us all to have a go. He wants us to spend time with him, to develop our faith in him, to step out, to face a little bit of failure and learn from it, so that we grow, that we mature, and he wants us to rejoice when we do it. He wants us to have fun, dare I say it, right? Doing it together, because it should be a ton of fun, having joy in seeing the kingdom grow together.